Welcome to Next on the Tee with Chris Mascaro, where tour players, legends, and the top instructors in the game share their stories, insights, and playing lessons. Join Chris every week as he talks with the greats of the game.
You are the smartest guy I've spoken to on radio or television in my career.
Chris, again, you're knocking out of the park. You're like 8 under par in this interview.
By having any research, I'm hiring your tail to be the research man. You're the best.
You're a fantastic host and tremendously respected in the golfing community.
Yeah, Chris, you do an amazing job, and your listeners are super lucky to have you, and it's always my pleasure.
Chris Mascaro is the king of the golf podcast. Don't miss him on Tuesdays.
Now, here's your host, Chris Mascaro.
Good evening, folks, and thank you for choosing to come back and be a part of this week's edition of Next on the Tee. I'm your host, Chris Mascaro. And what a time we have going on in our game right now. Participation out on courses around the world is at an all-time high. On the LPGA Tour, we have Nelly Korda doing amazing things. She's won 5 tournaments in a row, tying Annika Sorenstam and Nancy Lopez for the all-time record for most consecutive wins. Only Byron Nelson, Tiger Woods, and Ben Hogan have longer winning streaks over on the PGA Tour. And speaking of the PGA Tour, Scottie Scheffler, right? Now 4 of his last 5 tournaments in the W column, including the Arnold Palmer Invitational, the Players, the Masters, and now the RBC Heritage. So we have 2 dominant players doing their thing at the same time, which is extraordinary. Pay close attention, folks. This is an historical time in our game. Not since Annika and Tiger, about 15 or so years ago, have we seen something like this. And speaking of 15 years, I'll tell you someone else who is doing amazing things and has never seen anything like this because he wasn't born yet, and that is 15-year-old Miles Russell. He is the reigning junior players champion and reigning junior PGA champion. And not only did he become the youngest player ever to make the cut at a Korn Ferry Tour tournament, he finished tied for 20th after shooting rounds of 68, 66, 70, 66 at the Suncoast Classic in Lakewood Ranch, Florida. He's a lefty and obviously has a ton of game for being only 15 years old. Now, my hope is that people will just let him be. Let him play his game. Don't fill his head full of crazy expectations. Let's just marvel at this junior player's great talent and not put any tags on him like he's going to be the next anybody. Let him play. Let him have fun. And let's marvel at the things that he is doing out there. Okay, on to this week's show. In part 1, I'm going to be joined by our resident director of instruction, Tom Patry. I'll get TP's thoughts on Scotty and Nelly and the great things that they're doing. Also talk about why in the world did Victor Hovland go from winning the tour championship to making a swing change and changing coaches multiple times in the last 6 or 7 months. We'll also talk about Scotty's caddy, Ted Scott. He's about to make more money in just a couple of months than Arnold Palmer did in his whole playing career. I'll also get TP's thoughts on why TV ratings have dropped about 20%, including at the Masters, so far this year. A lot going on, a lot maybe driving people away from turning on those tournaments each and every week on TV. Tom will join me here in just a moment. Following him, former tour player and now one of the top instructors in our game, Larry Rinker, will be back. Rink and I will go back to 1983 and Larry's first time playing in the Masters. We'll hear about the practice round he got to play with Payne Stewart and Scott Hoke, his par 3 pairing with Gary Player and Gabe Brewer, and being in the final pairing at the 1984 Heritage Classic with Nick Faldo. That's when Faldo got his first PGA Tour win. We'll talk about all of those things, plus get a playing lesson from him when he joins me about 25 minutes from now. Then later this week in part 2 of the show, I'll start things off with PGA Tour caddy Kip Henley. Kipper is always so much fun to have as part of the show. What most people don't know is that he is a great player as well. He is one of the most decorated players in the history of the state of Tennessee. Among his many accolades are he is a 5-time Tennessee Player of the Year. He won the Golf Channel's Big Break 2 back in 2004. He's won the state section championship 4 times, the state open twice, and last summer, he added the state senior open championship as well. Sounds like, to me, He's got the Tennessee State Grand Slam, if you know what I'm saying. Look, he is one of the great players that that state has ever produced. And what has kept him out of the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame is boggling my mind. I'm working on that, though. He'll join me to lead off part two of this week's show. And then we'll round things out with a return visit from one of Golf Digest's top young teachers in America, Eva Rogers. Eva teaches up at one of the most historic courses in our country, Medina Country Club. They've hosted several majors on that golf course. I'll talk with Eva about being selected to serve on the 2024-2025 PGA lead team and what that means. We'll talk about the things she's doing as one of the top U.S. kids coaches to make the game fun and keep young players engaged in our game. Plus the call she got from the assistant to Illinois House of Representatives, Jennifer Sanalitro. A lot to get into with Eva. She is just absolutely fantastic. So, folks, settle in, get comfortable, sit back and relax, and let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for an hour tonight and then an hour a little bit later on this week. But as always, thank you so much for tuning in and taking the journey with me. Okay, before we get going, as I've been saying to you guys all season long, our resident director of instruction, Tom Patry, and I have been working with a company called Kickpoint. And they have done some magical things with our logos and created some polo shirts with some wonderful designs where they take our logos and turn them into designs on a polo shirt. They're absolutely outstanding. Kickpoint Golf is a private label custom golf apparel company making bespoke polo shirts, quarter zips, and hoodies for those selected clubs looking to take their branded game to a whole new level. If you want to check out their apparel, and again, it's going to knock your socks off, send an email to info@kickpointgolf.com. They'll get right back to you. There's no middleman. They're going to go right to the guys that do this work. You're going to check it out, and you are really going to love what they do. I'm going to start showing the polo shirts that they designed for me on my Instagram, at CT Mascaro. Check them out there so you can get a sample of what they look like. These guys know where it's at. Now let's talk about golf getaways and buddies trip locations. When you're thinking about that, think about our friends over at the Macklemore, which is a wonderful resort located just south of Chattanooga, Tennessee, high atop Lookout Mountain. It is a casual two-hour drive from Atlanta, Nashville, and Birmingham. The existing Highlands course is now ranked in the top 100 courses you can play in the U.S. by Golf Digest. The 18th hole is ranked in the top 10 finishing holes in the world. A second course, the Keep, is under construction and will open summer of 2024. The Keep is a Bill Bergen, Reese Jones design and features a mile and a half of dramatic cliff edge, with every inch of that edge filled up with a golf hole. A world-class hotel, Cloudland Lookout Mountain Curio Collection by Hilton, will open spring of 2024. Both have incredible views into historic Macklemore Cove, 1,200 feet below. You got to see it to believe it, folks. Stay, dine, and play golf above the clouds at Macklemore. Go online to macklemore.com to book your stay and play package. Now let's talk about the new P790 irons from TaylorMade. From the very beginning, P790 irons have been rooted in clean aesthetics and thoughtful design. However, their true beauty is found beneath the surface. With AI-optimized weighting and speed foam air on the inside, every iron is uniquely designed to perform exactly how you need it to. As striking as they are on the outside, their true beauty lies within. Learn more about the new P790 irons from TaylorMade by checking out their website at TaylorMadeGolf.com. Okay, now back in the house is our resident director of instruction, Tom Patry. You can find Tom down at Twin Eagles Club in Naples, Florida. As you know by now, he is a 13-time Golf Magazine Top 100 teacher, a 4-time PGA Teacher of the Year, 3-time Golf Digest Best in the State, including in this year's edition. And he is back with me again this week here on Next on the Tee. TP, how are you, my friend?
Happy belated birthday to you. Happy belated birthday to you. Happy belated birthday, dear Chrissy. Happy belated birthday to you.
Ah, there you go. Good for you for coming through. I wasn't going to let you off the hook because, you know, all I got is ungot from you for my birthday.
Ungots and ghoul.
Indeed. All right, Tommy. First things first. Let's get started right. Scotty Scheffler. This guy has now won the Arnold Palmer Invitational. He won the Players Championship the very next week and the first player ever to win that championship in back-to-back years. The next tournament he plays in is 2 weeks later at the Houston Open. He's a couple of short putts away from winning that thing. He ended up finished tied for second. Then he won the Masters. And then this past weekend, he goes out and wins the RBC Heritage. In his other five tournaments, oh, by the way, this year, he finished tied for fifth, tied for 17th, tied for sixth, tied for third, tied for 10th. Not bad. Your thoughts?
Yeah, he's got to clean it up a little bit. He's you know, he's a little slack. I mean, all the comparisons are obvious, right? Is he Tiger Woods? Well, he's certainly on a streak like Tiger Woods. I mean, reminiscent of Tiger Woods, but he's not there yet. So let's not get carried away. But certainly, one of the great streaks of all time. I put that streak alongside some of Tiger streaks, along certainly some of Johnny Miller's streaks back in the day. And Jack obviously has to be in that conversation. It's one of the really, really great hot streaks we've seen. Certainly, that is very Tiger-like. Amazing golf. I mean, amazing shot making, amazing consistency, just kind of running away from certain fields. Doesn't seem to have a flaw. You know, drives it beautifully. Great iron player. I mean,
how does he not have a flaw? How can you swing like that and not have a flaw? How does that happen?
Let me answer that, Chris, because this is my 40. I think I lose track. My 42nd or 43rd year teaching this game. You know, I teach beginners and I've coached tour players. I don't quite understand it. I get that question almost every day from at least one person on my list a day about the footwork and the craziness. And I got to be really honest with your audience. I don't have a freaking clue how he puts the club on the ball when he looks like a combination of Fred Astaire and Michael Jackson. It's amazing, you know. And I'm a huge Randy Smith fan. Randy's, you know, is Scotty's coach, a huge Randy Smith fan, and a wonderful teacher and a wonderful eye. And Randy has sidestepped that question continually, with very, very vanilla answers. But it's kind of Jim Furyk upside down, you know. Jim Furyk does crazy things above the belt line. Scotty does crazy things below the belt line. If you put Furyk's top and Scotty's bottom together, you'd have Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. But, I mean, certainly you can't take anything away from him. He's certainly doing some incredible things right now.
So if he starts to go sideways, even a guy like Furyk or any of these guys that have very different swings, if they were to come to you and, I mean, you can certainly watch the video of their hands and the club face and all of that sort of thing. How do you get someone, if Scotty were to end up, you know, hitting the ball all over the place and now all of a sudden it's not what it was right now, how do you get somebody like that back to where they were or are currently when you look at that, you got to be like, I don't know, Scotty. I don't know how to help you.
No, I don't think you're wrong, Chris. I mean, the thing about golf swings that are very, very unique or different, you know, and we can put, again, Scotty in that category, we put Jim in that category. We talk about Raymond Floyd's backswing. We talk about Chichi Rodriguez. You know, there's a lot of, you know,
Matthew Wolf,
Bubba Watson. We can put a lot of people in those kind of categories that are, you know, kind of outliers. None of those guys, by the way, that we mentioned have had the success that Scotty's had right now. You know, when you have something that's an outlier, that something's really unusual and really radical, you know, when it goes off, it's a hard fix to go back. I mean, it's a hard way to get back because you've been doing something that's so unconventional for so long. Some of it's just really, really great hand-eye coordination, a real gift. So if he goes off, I hope he doesn't come to me.
You mentioned his shot making a moment ago. People are saying now that he's boring to watch because he's such a great ball striker. He isn't compelling. He isn't Tiger Woods, who hit the ball off the tee all over the planet and then made these miraculous saves and got the ball up and down the way that he did. Scotty hits fairways. He hits greens. He makes putts. Ho-hum. Next hole. Next tournament. Is he boring to watch for you? Or as an instructor, do you look at him and do you marvel and you want to see more of it?
No, I want to see more. I'm intrigued by it. I mean, I'm intrigued by, I don't know. I mean, on my iPad right now, I probably got 25, at least 25 Scotty Scheffler swings because I really do keep playing them and taking the cursor and going back and forth and back and forth and watch the arrival of the golf club and what's going on, you know, on the ground with his feet, and just kind of intrigued to watch how he gets the club on the ball. So I marvel at it. I like to watch that stuff. I always enjoyed watching Furyk play. As a teacher, and more than as a student of the game, you want to try to figure this whole thing out. And so far, I haven't got a clue.
Speaking of people who think he's boring, if you've seen the television ratings lately and people writing about it, 20% fewer people on average are watching PGA Tour events these days, including the Masters, oh, by the way.
Yeah.
And some people are saying it's fan apathy because they're tired of all the PGA Tour, PIF, LIV, merger, infighting, whatever you want to call it, the separation in our game right now. Others are saying it's the casual fans that Tiger brought to the game, and they aren't watching anymore because he so rarely plays. And when he does, we saw what happened at the Masters. But do you or the people that you talk to, the members there at Twin Eagles, your students, do you feel like they're watching less golf because it's just not as compelling as it once was, or we're just tired of all this LIV and PIF stuff?
I think it's a combination, Chris. I think some of it's the LIV PIF stuff that we're really getting sick and tired of listening to. I mean, we want to watch golf. We don't want to hear about the deal that is never going to happen or seems like it's never going to happen, or who's defecting or who's, you know, it's like a soap opera. I mean, you know, I don't watch Days of Our Lives either, right? I'm not really fond of it. And then part of it too is, you know, if you looked at the Palmer era, swashbuckling Palmer era, it was fun. It was exciting. You didn't know what was going to happen next. Same thing with Seve. You didn't know what was going to happen next. And certainly Tiger brought that element to the screen where you didn't know what tree he was going to hit over, around, or under and pull off some miraculous shot. And now there's Scotty. The sound bites are pretty vanilla. The golf is pretty, it's spectacular. Don't get me wrong. It's wonderful golf. But it's down the middle on the green, knock it in. Down the middle, knock it in, you know, on the green, knock it in. So you don't have Palmer, you don't have Seve, and you don't have Tiger in that element. And again, of course, those sound bites were incredibly fun. You didn't know what was going to come out of Seve's mouth, or certainly didn't know exactly what was going to come out of Tiger's mouth at times. So there's that element too. It's not really. It's great golf. I'm not sure if it's great entertainment.
Let's talk a little bit about Scotty and the money. Last year, he set the single season all-time record.
The money.
He set the all-time record last year for the most money won on the course in a season. Now, take that with a grain of salt, right? We've got elevated events or signature events this year. We've got a lot of things that have made the purses larger. So it's not apples to apples, if you will. And it also doesn't include what Victor Hovland won for winning the tour championship, that bonus money piece. But just in a single year on the golf course, he set the record $21 million. John Rahm, second all time, not coincidentally, also last year at $16.5 million. So when you take a look at that was last year, and these guys are the top two money winners of all time on a single season on the golf course, Scotty's already third this year and that, and he's won $16.3 million over the last 43 days. Oh, by the way, that's $45,000 per hole over his last five events. He's also won twice as much money as Wyndham Clark, who is second on the money list so far this year. And if he wins the PGA in a few weeks at Valhalla, it could be a crazy summer talking about a potential grand slam. But, you know, then again, he's boring to watch. But money, unbelievable what Scotty Scheffler has done in a very short period of time monetarily.
And I was, it's funny you say that because I was going to ask you for a raise tonight.
I'll double it. I'll double what I'm paying you now. Don't worry.
Perfect.
About it.
Yeah. You know, ice cube to the Eskimos. That's what I always say. you know, it's incredible. I mean, again, you're right. It's not apples to apples because the elevated events and the money's gone through the roof. It's an amazing amount of money to make, not only in a year, but in the period of time that he's made it. You know, I mean, if you had told me during my day playing that somebody was going to make $21 million in a tour season or $4 million in a week, I would have, you know,
they asked you what kind of crack you were doing. You know, it's just, it's amazing. I mean, and we're not at the end yet because of this PIF live situation. If potentially something ever does get done, it could get even crazier.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're at the top of the mountain yet. What's too much? Where are we going with this? What's the incentive to win championships when you can kind of be 30th on the money list or 20th on the money list and make $8 or $10-12 million a year before you have an endorsement? What's the incentive? Does it drive the needle? Does it drive the player to be better? I'm not sure it's all good, Chris.
So let's take that a step further, Tom. His caddy, Ted Scott, has earned roughly $1.78 million this year so far, according to an article by Kyle Porter on CBSSports.com. That's, oh, by the way, more money than Rory has earned so far this year. If you really take a historical look, in Arnold Palmer's entire PGA Tour career, he made $2.13 million on tour. You know, the most Jack Nicklaus ever won in a season was $320,000. He did that back in 1972 when he won seven times. And here we have Scotty's caddy, likely exceeding how much money Mr. Palmer made in his career in one season. Not a bad year for Ted Scott.
Again, if you take me back 15 years or 20 years to when I was still, though actually longer now, 30 years, when I was still playing a little competitive golf, and you told me a caddy was going to make a couple million dollars a year in percentage earnings, I would have said, again, where's the cocaine? Where are you coming from? It's amazing, right? I mean, guy is carrying a golf bag. Now, listen, I don't disparage what caddies make, and I certainly think they do an unbelievable job in comparison with what caddies did in the past, and what they need to know and do, and what they do and come up with. And Teddy's a wonderful caddy, by the way, one of the best out there. But a caddy's going to make a couple million a year, more money than Arnold Palmer won in his career. I mean, I can't wrap my head around that and put that into any kind of context that I really and truly understand.
Speaking of great players, Victor Hovland, he won the Tour Championship last season. He was arguably the best player on the planet over the second half of 2023. Then he decides to make a swing change, Tom. Oh, by the way, he missed the cut at the Masters. He finished tied for 62nd at the Players. His best finish so far this season is a tied for 19th at the Genesis. Tom, why in the heck are you tinkering with a golf swing that just won you the Tour Championship?
Victor, if you're out there and you're listening, if somebody knows Victor and is listening, please send this to him. Victor, I want to have lunch with you. I want to sit down. I don't want you to hit one golf ball for me. I just want to talk some sense into you. What are you thinking about, son? Son, you were on the cusp last year of being Scottie Scheffler. You're on the cusp of being the best player in the world, or one of the three best, certainly. You're on the cusp of doing things that few people have ever done in the game. You were hitting shots and shooting scores that were incredibly, incredibly historical. And you decide to make a change. And not only do you decide to make a change, but you jump, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, in the past 3 months through three different coaches?
Right.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Victor, 239-404-7790. Let's have a beer and chat.
Solid advice. Before we crown Scottie Scheffler the next greatest player that Tiger might be handing the baton to, there's a 15-year-old kid, Tom, Miles Russell, who not only got a start on the Korn Ferry Tour last week, he finished tied for 20th. He became the youngest player to ever make the cut in a Korn Ferry Tour event. He's the reigning junior players champion, the reigning junior PGA champion, and he goes out there and shoots rounds of 68, 66, 70, 66. And he got a sponsor's exemption into this week's tournament. Talk about the play from this kid.
Miles, whatever you do, do not call Victor Hovland for any reason. Do not call Victor Hovland, Miles. Whatever you're doing, Miles, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. Don't listen to anybody. Don't take any phone calls. Don't answer any text or emails. just keep doing what you're doing. It's unbelievable, right? It's incredible. I mean, the talent now, Chris, the talent now, the young talent that's coming out, coming around, this kid's 15 years old. I mean, there are young men on the Korn Ferry Tour that could win a major, could win the U.S. Open, could win the British, could win the PGA, given the right week and the right circumstance. We don't understand. I mean, we're looking for our next Tiger Woods. We're looking for our next exciting player, our next soundbite. Well, guess what, folks? They're there. Just open your eyes. They're there already. They're all out there. It's an amazing, you know, we want a rock star. Well, the truth of the matter is we've got 150 rock stars. They're there. But we want something that's a little different. The package is different. It's more exciting. It's, you know, it says and does kind of crazy things. But everybody isn't that way. But the pure talent, we've got plenty of it. It's incredible. The kid is an amazing thing. My hat's off to him. I mean, it's just world-class stuff.
Yeah, I mean, my only concern for him, and he is obviously a wonderful player, but at 15 years old, all the stuff that's going to start flying at him, to your point about don't look at social media, don't read your text messages, all that kind of stuff, because people are going to come out of the woodwork. I hate for kids at that age. I mean, obviously, I want them to have success. It's fantastic that he's having success. I just get worried about kids at that age and everything that this success and what people will throw at him, and the expectation, I think, is the word I'm looking for. The expectations that people are going to place on him if he continues this run and continues to get sponsors exemptions and play well and, you know, top 20s, top 10s out there on the Korn Ferry Tour. It just worries me at this age that people are going to label him. He's the next Tiger Woods. He's the next this, the next that. And more often than not, Tom, and you and I go back a long ways with our, you know, sports fandom. How many times as a kid when you were growing up in New York did you hear about some guy that was coming up through the Yankee system that was going to be the next Mickey Mantle? He's the next Joe DiMaggio. And then the next thing you know, you haven't heard from him, you know, 2 years later. I just hate that level of expectation.
And Chris, to your point, let's just go back a couple of months and talk about Nick Dunlap winning in the desert. And what has he done since then?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he just shot a million at the Masters. He shot a million at Harbortown, right? I mean, he's missed several cuts. And he won as an amateur in the desert, and it was spectacular. It was a great story. And everybody, you know, crowned him the next superstar, and he's really struggling. Golf is a really hard game, okay? A really, really hard game. And it doesn't take much to go sideways. The same little tweak going in the right direction makes you Scottie Scheffler. And here's what people don't understand. The difference between Scottie Scheffler right now and Nick Dunlap isn't that big a difference. It's these little tiny things that drive you either mechanically in the right direction or the wrong direction, or more importantly, psychologically in the right direction or the wrong direction. This is a very, very, very fragile game, man. Very fragile.
Yeah, well, let's take that a step further, because we always talk about the mental approach on this show. And that's the thing, right? As you start letting some of these things creep it between your ears, whether it's you're the greatest and you're going to be the next this or that or the other thing, or the opposite side of that coin is you're not that good, and you start all the negative self-talk because you are Nick Dunlap and you've had a struggle over the last 3 or 4 months after having such great success. Those things start to take root in your head and can start taking you the wrong direction. You may have a beautiful golf swing, and I think you and I have seen a lot of great players over the years with beautiful golf swings, but didn't win a heck of a lot because they didn't think they could. And that's where it starts to get dangerous for me.
I think it's extremely dangerous. I mean, we've watched some really great players, you know, a few that come to mind right away who just got going the wrong way mechanically. Ian Baker Finch was ascending to a really high level on the world stage in the peak of his career, and then went in search of, you know, the Holy Grail and make a swing change, never to be heard from again. And I mean, a guy who had a beautiful golf swing,
right?
A great putting stroke, you know, and a wonderful demeanor, but got going a little bit the wrong way and got a little bit too, greedy is not the right word, but understand the context which I'm using it in, and all of a sudden couldn't find his way back, right? Just couldn't find his way back. And I hope I really hope, and I don't know Victor Hovland. Victor Hovland wouldn't know me if he tripped over me. What a wonderful talent, and I hope the clouds part and he finds his way back, because he was good for golf. He's entertaining, and he's so talented. I hope he finds his way back.
Yeah, and Hal Sutton's a guy that Hal was on the show last week. Hal's become a wonderful friend. He's told the story many times on this show about when he first came out onto the PGA Tour, and he had such great success in college, Player of the Year. He comes out, he wins the PGA Championship in 1983. He did it by a stroke over Jack Nicklaus. And the next thing you know, people started labeling him and had expectations for him that he was going to be the next Jack Nicklaus. And that is hard to live up to. And he started to get down on himself because he wasn't living up to the expectations that other people had stuck on him. And then you start going through all the things, right? You start to, why am I not winning? You start getting in your head. Now I need to change my swing. Now I need to do this, that, and the other thing. He had to get away from the game essentially for a number of years. And we know, you know, he won the Players Championship also in 1983. Didn't win the Players again until 2001 to beat Tiger. But had to get away from the game for a long time to kind of clear his head and almost start over from scratch and then build his game back up. And he did a wonderful job of that. But there's a lot of years in between 1983 and 1999, 2000. Yeah.
I played college golf at the same time as Hal and was around him a little bit. He's, you know, just was an incredible, incredible amateur college talent, and obviously, you know, proved himself at the highest level on tour. And again, you're right. There's an example of just getting going a little bit the wrong way psychologically and little expectations being put on you that aren't really fair after, you know, a little bit of success. I mean, the depth of Jack's success, the depth of Tiger's success, depth of, you know, a really truly world player's success, they do this over a long period of time, over a huge number of events on the world stage, and they do it repeatedly. That's a really, really unique talent to stay the course on that and not get sidetracked or pulled, you know, pulled out of your lane, if you will, mental lane, if you will, and be able to keep going forward and climbing the mountain. That takes a really unique individual. The stuff that, I mean, as much as we appreciate Tiger Woods right now and his career, you know, when you and I are long dead and gone and they write those history books, you know, he'll be written about like Superman. Basically, I mean, the things he did and how long he sustained those runs and how many events he won in a row, and how many events he won multiple times. You know, it's incredible what he did. I don't think we have to step back and look at that and realize, how did he sustain that for that long?
Right. Tom, one more before I let you go. And you've got an interesting alligator story that happened nearby your Twin Eagles golf course.
Oh, boy. So I'm giving a lesson the other day to a gentleman who's at a club right alongside, or two clubs down from Twin Eagles on the same road. And good friend. And he tells a story that, you know, it's a real estate development too, like Twin Eagles is. And the man's out walking his two golden retrievers at 9 o'clock at night, and you know, right on the club property, you know, in the street that he lives on, and out of nowhere in the dark, this gator charges him. He gets flustered and he backs up, and he trips over one of the dog's leashes, goes to the ground, and the gator grabs him by the leg, and the gator is then trying to drag him back into a lake that he's come out of. Which is what they do, and they drown you basically, and then that's the end of that. Well, as this happens, a car comes around the corner, and a headlight shine on the street, and it's a friend who realizes what's going on, and he pulls up and he runs over the gator, and the gator releases the guy, and the guy pulls away, and the gator kind of shuffles back onto one of these people's front lawns, and they get the guy up on his feet, and you know, he's safe. But if that car hadn't come around the corner, he'd be at the bottom of the lake at the club, and everybody would be wondering where he went, because nobody would have realized what had happened. You know, every year down here, we hear a story about, unfortunately, a person, a child, an animal, a dog, a deer, that, you know, one of these gators latch onto. And everybody thinks it's, you know, like it won't happen to them. And I tell all my folks that come down, especially from the north, who aren't really familiar with wildlife down here, that when you hit the ball on that hazard on the left, the ball is not that important. Okay, just drop one and we'll hit it. We'll hit another. But this guy could have, you know, 9 o'clock at night, if nobody else was out there walking, and off he goes into the lake in the dark, you know, maybe they would never have figured out what would have happened. Incredible stuff.
Yeah, no kidding. Thank God that car came along.
Oh my God. Oh my God. You know.
Tom, before I let you go, remind our listeners, how can we stay up to date with all the great things you're doing? Get some of those free lessons on your YouTube channel and follow you on social media.
Chris, I'm going to be down here at Twin Eagles year round now. So anybody who wants to take a trip to Florida in the off season when it's a little quieter, you can get into some restaurants and play some golf and get on the first tee that's uncrowded. I'm going to be down here all summer long with a few escapes. I'm going to play a couple of senior events this summer in the section, which I'm really excited about. But www.tompatry.com, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And then certainly all that information, like I said, is available at the website. And more importantly, they can find me here every other Tuesday night with yours truly, my friend. And it's such an honor to be on with you, pal. And you know, we say these things on the air and it sounds kind of fluffy and like we're pumping each other up. But, man, you do a great job. We love We all in the business love what you do. We have a lot of respect for what you do. You've given a bunch of us a platform that we wouldn't otherwise have. We appreciate what you do, pal, very, very much.
Well, the appreciation flows right back to you, my friend. You're the best. Take care. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up again in a couple of weeks.
Tell Rinker that, you know, I have a place in my lesson book. If he wants to come by and have me, I can take a look at him.
I will pass that along, and by the expression on his face, I think he can see that. So he's waving you off like he's not interested in that at all.
I'll talk to you soon, pal.
All right, man. See you, Tom.
Bye, buddy.
That's a great Tom Patry, folks. Again, at Tom Patry Golf on Instagram. TomPatry.com is his website. And go out on YouTube and subscribe to the channel and get those free lessons. As I always say, they don't come better than that guy. He's a wonderful friend and a wonderful individual and a fantastic teacher as well. So can't wait to have him back on the show again here in a couple of weeks. Coming up next is a guy who had a great college career at the University of Florida, won an SEC championship, played out on the PGA Tour for a few years, and is now one of the top instructors in our game, and that is Larry Rinker. Before I get to Larry, I was talking with Eddie Dry, VP of Domestic Sales for Strixon Cleveland Golf, at the PGA Merchandise Show earlier this year, and I said, Eddie, I like your CBX full-face wedges. How can they help an average player like me play better? Here's what he had to say.
An average player, I use one, and I'm in some lies that you can't even believe. And I need all the help I can get. And the face is bigger, and the grooves go all the way up and all the way out to the toe. So if you hit it on the toe, you miss it, bam, there's a groove. So I like that. So I carry a 58.
There you have it, folks. Try the new CBX full-face wedges from Cleveland Golf. I also want to give a shout-out to my friends over at On Point Golf and their great On Point ball marker. Get the number one ball marker in the game of golf. On Point is the only three-dimensional ball marker out there. With alignment technology and a removable coin that is approved to use according to the rules of golf. As you know, putting is all about line and pace. Mark your ball with On Point, engage with your three-dimensional ball marker, and have more confidence in your line, execute the putt, and you're going to lower your scores. Do what the likes of Jim Furyk, PGA professionals, and amateurs alike are doing now. They use the number one ball marker in golf and they lower their scores. You know Ken Duke and Thong Chai JD. They won for the first time on the PGA Tour in 2023 and they were using an On Point ball marker. Get yours at onpointgolf.us and make more putts. And oh, by the way, you can also customize the removable coin for any club, event, or corporate outing. They make really great tee gifts and custom products. That's also going to help lower your score. I use On Point ball markers. Mine is black and gold, 3D black golf ball with a gold line down the middle to help me line up my putts. It's like having a 15th club in my bag. It's helped my game. Why wouldn't you let it help yours? Again, onpointgolf.us. See what I'm talking about. Order yours today. Now let's talk grips. I want to tell you about Lamkin grips. Every shot, as you know, has its own unique feel. The trick? Feel comfortable with each one. And comfort is built into the very DNA of Sonar Plus Black grips. Composed of their Genesis material that provides supreme comfort and durability, with their fingerprint technology, creates a strong connection and unforgettable touch. The game changes from shot to shot. The feel on your hand shouldn't. Lamkin. Feel is everything. All right, now back with me, as you heard leading into this, is another one of the all-time great instructors in our game, Larry Rinker. Larry is from Stuart, Florida, and he's a part of a great golf family. He and his brother Lee both played out on the PGA Tour. His sister Lori played on the LPGA Tour. She won twice out there and regularly was amongst the top 10 during the 1980s and 90s. Larry played his college golf at the University of Florida, where he took the individual medal honors at the SEC Championship in 1978, and he was named All-SEC in 78 and 79, and an All-American in 78 as well. He turned pro in 1980. He won six times out on the mini tour. He teamed with Lori to win the 1985 JCPenney Mixed Team Classic. And over the course of his tour career, he had 2 second place finishes, 2 thirds, and 26 top tens. Like I say, he is now one of the top instructors in our game, and I couldn't be more honored. He is back with me again this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Larry, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me.
Good for you for turning down any of those free invitations from Tom Patrick. Because goodness knows, you wouldn't want to ruin your backswing by letting him take a look at it.
I'm not going to comment on that, but we've known each other for a long time. I'm the only Rinker that hasn't had a lesson from him. So I wanted to throw that in that way.
Good call. Good call out of you. Larry, I want to start off by getting your thoughts on what we're seeing right now on both the PGA and LPGA tours with Scottie Scheffler and Nelly Korda. We're seeing two players dominate on both of those tours at the same time. Have you seen anything like that happening concurrently before?
Maybe Annika and Tiger. At one point, they were kind of like this. I don't think we've really seen a stretch. It'd be interesting to look back and see when's the last time someone won 3 out of 4 tournaments, like Scottie Scheffler's done. And... or actually, he's won 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5, right.
And Nelly Korda winning 5 in a row, obviously tying what Nancy Lopez and Annika have done on the LPGA Tour. So it's pretty interesting when you think, you know, if you had a career and won 5 times in your career, that would be a nice career for pretty much everybody, except the superstars. And you look at Scheffler winning 4 of the last 5, again, that would be a nice career, especially with 2 masters in there. But it's really remarkable. I just feel both of them have found something. They don't want to wake up. They have a way they're going about it. I really believe Scottie Scheffler's faith has a lot to do with what he's doing. I think that keeps him grounded. He's not somebody going out and buying a Lamborghini after he wins a tournament. So he is someone that still has his roots and has his family. And with all the money he's made, it's almost like he just put it in a bank account, invested it, and hasn't really start living the lifestyle of the amount of money he's making. So I just think him being so grounded, he's deep in his faith, you know, his answers, you know, what's most important to him in life, his faith and his family. And then Nelly Korda, she has a beautiful golf swing. Her parents were both professional athletes. So she seemed more nervous on Sunday than Scottie did. And she even was candid enough to say that. But, you know, it's pretty amazing. These are runs we do not see very often.
Larry, speaking of Scottie winning the Masters, you played in the Masters a couple of times, first time being back in 1983, which is the year that Seve would win his second green jacket. What do you remember about your first Masters experience?
First, I had a dream that the first time I went to the Masters, I was playing in it. And so that was a dream that I got to live. I didn't dream past the first tee or playing in it. I didn't dream of winning it. But I did, growing up in Florida, dream that it would be really cool if the first time I went to the Masters, I was playing in it. So I got to do that. I would say I was very nervous. I was in 83. I'd only been on tour, hadn't even been on tour 2 years at that point. I did have a successful U.S. Open at Pebble Beach in 82. I was in the final group on Saturday there and finished tied for 15th. Which that's how I got in the Masters in 1983. And that's how I got back in the U.S. Open at Oakmont in 83. But I was nervous. And it's a golf course that you just have to have your nerves in check. The greens are so fast. And the course is so undulating. There's so many awkward things about the golf course. You've got a lie on the 10th hole with the ball above your feet, which would make you want to draw the ball, yet you really want to hit a fade into that green. You've got a lie on number 9 with the ball below your feet where you'd want to hit a cut shot in, but you really want to draw it into that green. You know, just so many little things like that. Hole locations, you get a sand wedge in your hand on 13, holes cut front right or front left. You're just 5 yards over Raised Creek and you want to be aggressive and go for it. But, you know, we saw balls land a little short of the flag and spin back in the water on both of those holes. So here you are. Finally, I got a chance to take a chance and you've got to hit it 20, 25 feet past the hole because you can't make the mistake of putting it in the pond. But it's a huge advantage at Augusta to be able to hit the ball high and long. And historically, those have been the people that have won there. And then obviously, you have to be incredibly skilled around the greens with your short game and putting. And that is something that Scottie Scheffler is pretty amazing with. I think he's an underrated putter. I think he's better than most people think. And his short game, obviously, the stats show his short game's pretty incredible. You know, it's like ho-hum on Sunday. Oh, the second hole, par 5. Oh, I'm just going to chip in here on the second hole for eagle to just kind of get the round going, get the coffee going, you know, just stuff that he does is really amazing. And like I said, it's pretty amazing what they're doing, but the Masters is a special place. I really cherish the 2 times I got to play. I wish I would have made the cut. It's the only major I did not make the cut in, but it's truly a special place. And it's a special week, and it's always something we really look forward to. And I really look forward to it this year because we had all the live guys playing. Because I really want to watch Cam Smith play and DJ and John Rahm and Brooks Koepka. Those guys are world-class players. And so when you think of a major, you want to see all the best players in the world playing in that event. And it was great to see everyone playing.
Speaking of some of the best players in the world, you had a practice round with Payne Stewart and Scott Hoke at the time. What was it like going around with those two guys?
When I finished 15th at Pebble, the next tournament was Westchester. And I remember I was playing a practice round. I was on the first hole, and I was second tee, and the 18th hole kind of comes by there, and Payne was playing a practice round. He saw me. He runs over. He scissor kicks the gallery rope, runs up to me and says, "Hey, man, way to go. I got to win a tournament so we can play practice rounds together." So he wins at Quad Cities, and we played 2 practice rounds at the Masters. Because I've got a picture of us on the first tee with different outfits on, the one that I posted online last or the week of the Masters. So we played 2 practice rounds there. So it was great. And it's great looking at these old swings. And, you know, you look at the way Payne swung the club then. And it just seemed there was a lot more to rhythm and tempo back in the day playing with wooden clubs. Today, everything is just so fast. The guys are in amazing shape. They work so hard to get in shape. They can make the golf club go so fast today. You know, they just do a lot of things differently than we used to do as far as getting their bodies in shape. That's one of the big reasons why they hit it so far. Obviously, the clubs and the ball are really the and the equipment. That's the other component. But these guys are athletes, and they're bigger. They're bigger and stronger than we were when we played.
You also got to play in the par three tournament with a couple of Masters champions and Gary Player and Gabe Brewer. What was it like going around in the par three with those two?
Well, it was great. I've always been a student of the game. I've always liked to talk about the swing. I've worked with a lot of different teachers through the years. And so it was just great sitting, playing a practice round Gary Player and picking his brain and talking to him about what he was doing and giving what I thought about. You know, I'd been at that point in time, I'd been working with Bob Toski for about 7 years at that point in time. So, you know, I had some pretty good ideas on how to play golf and how to control the club and how to control my ball. So it was great just talking about some different things. But, you know, the Black Knight, Gary Player, one of the greatest players of all time. And just anytime you can play with someone like that, it's a real treat. And then Gabe Brewer, Whirly Bird, he's got that Whirly Bird move at the top. You know, got the cigarette dangling out of his mouth playing a practice round. It was the whole days. You don't see that on tour today. I mean, when's the last time you saw somebody other than John Daly with a cigarette dangling out of their mouth when they're playing golf? So, but it's just great. You know, I say to people all the time, play with better players. You see rookies on tour, have the guts to walk up to, you know, my day was have the guts to walk up to Jack Nicklaus or Tom Watson or Lee Trevino and say, hey, can I play a practice round with you? And go play golf with these guys. You know, today it's, hey, see if you can play with Scottie Scheffler and see if you can get a practice round with Tiger Woods or, you know, all these great players. That's always a great thing for these young guys to do. Just don't go out and play with your buddies.
Larry, I read in 1984, you set a goal of winning $45,000 that year so you could make the top 125 money winners and earn your exemption for the following year. You finished second to Bob Eastwood in the USF&G Classic in New Orleans thanks to a final round 68. You earned $43,200 that week, so you exceeded your goal. Were you the happiest runner-up ever that week?
I was, and I think anyone that's never made the top 125, now it's the FedEx Cup, but the top 125, they don't get to play in the playoffs. Now it's top 70. But to make the top 125 was the whole thing. You didn't have to go back to the Q school, and that meant you had a job for the next year. So, yeah, when I finished second there, I was so happy, and I remember, you know, I was playing the last hole, and Eastwood was playing great. He had a 3-shot lead on me, and I had a couple shot lead on second. And I was like, just get this ball on the green, 2-putt, make a par, and finish second alone. You know, that's a good step for you. That'll be your best finish. And I was able to do that, knocked a 4-iron on the green and 2-putted on 18 to finish second. And you're right, it was a huge difference, you know, and I ended up finishing 60th on the money list that year, which was the old standard, what you had to do before 1982, 1983. So, but yeah, that was a huge moment in my career, that tournament.
A few weeks later at the Heritage Classic, you were in the final group on Sunday with Nick Faldo and Dan Pohl. Faldo started the day 4 strokes ahead of you guys. He would go on to get his first PGA Tour victory that day. What was it like being in the final group and watching him get his first PGA Tour victory that day?
It was great. And going back to New Orleans, I was in the next to last group on Saturday and Sunday at New Orleans. And it was interesting. I was playing well that year, but I got paired with Jack Nicklaus on Sunday at Pebble Beach, and I never played well with Jack, and I shot 80 or something at Pebble. And then now, a few weeks later, I get paired with him at the Honda Classic on Sunday again and do not play well. And I was in the top 10 at Bay Hill going to play well, the home tournament for me living in Orlando. And so now here I am in New Orleans, and I hit my tee shot on Sunday in these tree roots. They had these tree roots at Lakewood Country Club. So I hit it there and had to chip out, and I make bogey on one. I'm like, okay, here we go again. Is this going to be another bad Sunday? And then I reeled off 4 birdies in a row And it was, I finally played well on Sunday and got the job done. So now, just a few weeks after that, I'm in the final group with Nick Faldo, and I hadn't been there before, and I did not play well. I can't really remember a whole lot about the front nine, other than it wasn't not a lot of highlights. But it was great watching Nick win. And sometimes, as Jack Nicklaus always said, you got to learn how to lose before you learn how to win. But looking back on that now and watching Nick Faldo swing before Ledbetter, you know, it's kind of neat to see his swing and the way he went about himself. And, you know, he really hasn't won many tournaments in the United States. I mean, other than the Masters, I think he only has two or three tour victories. I think there's only three others besides the Masters and British Open. And then obviously he won a bunch in Europe, but tournaments that he won in the United States, not that many.
Larry, I want to switch gears because I'd like to get a playing lesson from you. And you've been using the Right Balance system, which has three swing models, for years. Talk about what Right Balance is.
Right Balance, Dr. David Wright, he's done a lot of research. He's had some great doctors he's worked with. Some of the doctors he worked with, Frank Jobe. He has also been someone that's worked with the PGA Tour. He was instrumental in when we first had a fitness truck rolling on the tour in the early to mid 80s. And he did the Tommy John surgery. There's a Robert Watkins spine guy that has done a lot of surgeries. He did Peyton Manning's neck surgery, Dwight Howard's back. I mean, his list of people he's worked with is greats of all the sports. I even think Payne might have had a surgery with him. But Dr. David Wright did this, and the three swing models are called upper, mid, and low core. And really, everybody fits into one of those models. And I really believe Doc Wright has created a semblance of order in that these setup and swing characteristics go together. And so if you're a low core, here are the swing and setup characteristics that go with that. If you're mid-core, which is what everybody's teaching, that's your average tour player swing, there are setup and swing characteristics that go with that. And then upper core, which most of us are, which nobody teaches, has its own set of things that set up things and swing characteristics. And I really believe we don't have more upper core players on the tour because they got coached out of their swings at some point in their career. And there's probably people that even got to tour and got coached out of it, got in college, got coached out of it, juniors. And really, we believe 2/3 of all men are upper core, all ages. So it's these models are interesting. Simple things like your hip rotation, how rotated are your hips at impact, your grip has to match it. So if you're a low core player with your lower body very rotated, a la Lee Trevino, Dustin Johnson, Paul Azinger, Daniel Berger, strong grip players, well, they're going to be very rotated. And the rotation of the body is a face opener. So they need a really strong grip to match up the rotation in their lower body. That's low core. And they're basically ghost. I've only measured 14 out of 1,400 people. You don't see many of them. You'll see more in the LPGA than you would the PGA Tour. And then the mid-core is what everybody's teaching. We know the average tour player's hips are rotated 40, 45 degrees at impact. So we want that. We want this certain forward shaft length. We want to be in posture. So people are looking for that picture of impact. And then upper core players, we stand up, come out of posture, release early, and our hips are not very rotated, and we have the most neutral grip. So your grip has to match your hip rotation and how you release. And the release, how you release the club with your arms, hands, and wrists, is there's different timings and things that you do. A low core player is going to lag and rotate. An upper core player is going to keep his back at the target, like Jack Nicklaus talked about, and feel like he starts the club right away from the top of his swing. Nicklaus talked about that as well. So we believe Jack Nicklaus is upper core. could have been mid-court early in his career, but certainly when he won the 86 Masters, he was upper core.
So, Larry, for our listeners that want to really get a better understanding of which one are they, what does this actually look like, where can they go online to see what you're talking about and follow you through how to understand which one of those three they are and what they look like?
Just go to my YouTube channel. I have a lot of videos on there about the three swing models, and there are several videos on my YouTube channel that talk about the characteristics of each one. Some of the videos might even say, okay, which one are you? And if you video your swing, I mean, we have iPhones now that video at 240 frames per second. You know, a lot of people think they're rotating their body through the ball, but they actually aren't that rotated when they hit it. So, but there's a lot on my YouTube channel. I post a couple videos a week on social media. Normally they're short, so they're under a minute, but there's all kind of stuff on YouTube. I wrote an ebook on the upper core swing. They can get that at my website, larryrinker.com. But there's definitely a lot of stuff out there. It's called Right Balance, W-R-I-G-H-T balance, .com. And so there's tons of stuff out there if you just hit Google.
And Larry, as you alluded to a moment ago, you've got a lot of really great lessons that can be found out on your Instagram post. Talk about how people can follow you on social media and check out those as well.
On Instagram and Facebook, it's Larry Rinker Golf. So all you would have to do on those social platforms is go there. On Twitter, it's just Larry Rinker. And then my YouTube channel is Larry Rinker Golf. So I'm posting on those four weekly. And I really try to give in a short, under a minute, I'm trying to give, you know, some tip. Here's a tip. You know, it's funny. Some of the comments, it's like, hey, that's a golf lesson, what you're asking for. I mean, I'm just really trying to put a tip out there. But, you know, I have tips on everything. I mean, I'm really a total game instructor. I teach putting, short game, distance wedges, full swing, do a ton of playing lessons, full day golf schools. So really, I'm all about teaching the whole game. I'm quasi can talk about the mental game because I've worked with some of the greats, Bob Rotella, Dick Koop, Fred Shoemaker. I've got a lot of personal experience in that space as well.
To your point about golf schools, so this one more before I let you go, but for folks that want to be in one of your golf schools or check out dates and things of that nature, how can they get more information about that?
They can find out about them at larryrinker.com. My cell number and my email address is on every page of my website, and they can go there. I don't have specific dates that I have golf schools. It's really what days we have available at the golf course and what days I'm not booked. So people just contact me, and they tell me generally when they want to come down. I don't put people together that don't know each other. So if you're by yourself, it would be a private. But if it's two, three, and I have four people coming for a three-day school on Sunday. So I like having the groups already put together when they come to me. And so that's the way I do it. And I have itineraries and all the information you might need in regard to what we do at the golf schools on my website, larryrinker.com.
Larry, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule to come back and be a part of the show. I had four pages of notes and hardly got through one. I hope we get the privilege of having you back on the show again sometime soon.
Anytime, Chris. Thank you so much for having me. And hey, congrats on your podcast. You're highly ranked. And I had a show on Sirius XM for 6.5 years. I know how much work it is. And congrats to you. You're doing great.
Well, I appreciate that very much, Larry. Means a great deal to me. Take care, my friend. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
Keep swinging.
You bet. Take care, Larry. That is the great Larry Rinker, at Larry Rinker Golf on Instagram, at Larry Rinker on Twitter, and larryrinker.com is his website. Folks, I'm telling you, when I say I had four pages worth of notes, I really did, because there are so many great tips out there, and we'll maybe get the opportunity to have Larry back on and go through some of them. But to his point, a minute or less, and if you scroll through those on his Instagram page and you watch those, take those with you on your cell phone to the range if you're going to go out and have a range session. Take them in the backyard if you've got a hitting net, or take them out on the golf course if you're just playing around as a round of golf and not in something serious, obviously. But take those with you, watch those, and then you can put them to work right then and there for yourself and see what Larry's talking about. He's got some really great short game tips, from exercises and drills for how to get better control of your speed on the greens with your putter, how to chip and get them closer, where you're, shaft lean and things of that nature that can make a difference. Face of the club versus toe of the club that might make you hit it a little bit softer if you've got firm and fast greens. There are so many great playing lessons available for you on Larry's social media and on his website. I can't recommend it highly enough. We'll try to get Larry back on the show again here before too long and go through those. But in the meantime, you need to go out there and subscribe and take a look at the things he does every day. Your golf game is going to get immediately better. All right, my friends, I'm going to put a bow on part one of this week's edition of the show. My sincere thanks to Tom Patry and Larry Rinker for joining me in this part of the show. Coming up in part two, you'll hear my conversations with Kip Henley and Eva Rogers, two fantastic individuals. Kip is a very undervalued. Kip is one of the most underappreciated and undervalued players that the state of Tennessee has ever put out. You listen to what his resume is, and I'll go through that in his introduction in the next part of the show, but tremendous the things that he has accomplished in the state of Tennessee golf. And if you follow him on Twitter, at Kip Henley, you know what a great follow he is and how much fun he is. Even though we don't always agree, I always respect his opinions, and he always makes me smile. And Eva Rogers is just one of the most wonderful people, a great U.S. kids instructor, and someone who has been named by Golf Digest as one of the best young teachers in America. So come back, listen to part two, hear those conversations. You're really going to enjoy them. They are two wonderful individuals. But as always, folks, I can't thank you enough for tuning into this part of Next on the Tee. You guys are the best supporters in the history of podcasts. I mean that very sincerely from the bottom of my heart. I can't thank you enough for all of your wonderful support. Until next time, hit 'em straight, my friends.